Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store. This weekend's message is from Tyler McKenzie. He's the lead pastor here at Northeast.
It's game day, y'all. Welcome to church. Hey, if you're out in the lobby getting coffee, taking your time, you better get in here because we're starting off hot straight from the top. Hey, my name's Tyler McKenzie. I'm the lead pastor here. I am really, really thrilled that you guys have joined us here today. If you were here last night, you know, last night got this thing off to a good start, and we're just going to keep it rolling today. Now, here's something I said to you at the beginning of the series, and I want to say to you again, all right? Every single weekend, I believe I get the opportunity to stand before one of the most high potential, high capacity, high accomplishing congregations on the face of the planet Earth. Like the leadership capacity in this room every single weekend is tangible, y'all. And honestly, sometimes I got no idea why you keep coming back and listening to me. Like I'm genuinely surprised when you keep showing up. I think it's just because I speak on behalf of God, right? Now, here's the thing though. Here's the thing. All right. That really, really kind of, I don't know, surprises me as a pastor and that I just feel like I'm compelled to point out to you over the course of this series. While many of us in this room bring all sorts of intentionality into our families, into our schedules, into our workspaces, every single day, when it comes to the most important arena of our life, our faith, which is supposed to be the foundational, the framework of it all, most of us just, we just wing it, right? We just wing it. Like if I were to ask you, what's your strategic plan over the next year for your spiritual development? Most of you would laugh. If I were to ask you, hey, do you have a line item in your budget called kingdom giving? Most of you would roll your eyes. If I were to ask you, hey, do you take a day or two quarterly for spiritual development rather than just professional development? Most of you would be like, I've never really thought of that before, right? Don't you see? I know this room is chock full of leaders. I do. But what I wish is that our leaders in this room would take that same sort of strategy and intentionality that we take into the rest of our lives and take it to our faith. Because I believe with a congregation like ours, we are only one, two intentional steps away from revival together if we could all get our minds wrapped around that. So that's been the challenge of this series. All right, this is the first of four playbook series that we're doing over the course of the year. And each four of the series, we're going to be focusing on a different arena of your life. We've been focusing on the workspace. And so today, we are going to talk specifically about how to take the love of Jesus into the workspace as we bring this thing to a close. After the service is over with, we're going to have kind of like a Sunday school hour, topical breakouts, if you will be really, really great. And hopefully you leave after the next hour and 45 minutes with some really practical stuff. Now, without further ado, I get to welcome two amazing guests to our stage today to help give us a little bit of advice and inspiration on our workspace. So first and foremost, I'm going to welcome to our stage Scott Satterfield, the ACC Coach of the Year. He puts the SAT in Saturdays around his place. And his work in revitalizing the culture of U of L football has just been amazing to me over the last year. And also, I get to welcome to the stage today Coach Dan McDonald, one of my good friends, 72% winning percentage, two-time National Coach of the Year, 10 conference titles, 84 draft picks. And as you guys can see, my man's got his uniform on because at about 9:45, he's going to hit the road and go coach game three, and they're going to pull out the broomsticks today. All right. Now, can you give them a hand one more time? I'm really thrilled that they're here today. These are busy dudes, but they wanted to serve the church. So, all right, I think just about everybody in this room knows the professional details of your bios because you guys are public figures in this city. So I want to start by asking you guys just a few things about your spiritual bio, if you will, just so everybody can know kind of that side of you. So first question for you would be this. How long have you been a Christian, and how did that relationship with Jesus come about?
Back in Hillsboro, North Carolina, kind of where I grew up. But I went to a church in Durham, North Carolina, probably about 4 minutes from Duke University, Emmanuel Baptist Church. And I was very blessed to grow up in that and to come to know Jesus at an early age when I was 10 years old. And so I've been riding with Jesus for a long time now. Yeah. And, you know, and that's kind of carried me to where I'm at today.
Anybody know that North Carolina accent here? First time I met Satterfield, I was like, man, me and you, brother. When's the save? Okay, 336. Hey, go ahead, Dan.
Well, the reason we have this...
This is not a North Carolina accent.
Well, you can tell the reason we have a Yankee uniform is I'm from New York.
And, okay, you got some...
So I grew up Catholic. Our Lady of Mercy, went to Catholic school. And what was lost as a young kid, and it was around middle school age, maybe a few years after Scott, where I just gave my life to Christ and was committed to going to church, committed to prayer. Maybe didn't know exactly why, but really became a prayer warrior and just tried to trust God's path all the way to Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah. You guys don't know this about Dan. Me and him have become good buddies here over the last few years. When he says he's a prayer warrior, every week we're sharing prayers with each other via text. So I'm super thankful for him in my life. All right. So I want to go just a little bit deeper with a little bit more shallow questions. So I'm going to call this the lightning round here. And I'm just going to ask you guys like 7 or 8 very shallow questions. And we'll start with you, Dan. We'll go Dan Scott. All right. And you guys just answer them in like a word or a phrase. All right. As fast as you can. All right. Ready? Dan, you first. What are you reading right now?
Three quick books. Legacy, our team is reading about the rugby, New Zealand rugby team. Reading Miracle Morning, which is about, you know, self-help, inspirational book about getting up and going. And Prodigal God is my spiritual book. And it's the lost prodigal son. And it's as you read it, it kind of hits you in the chest because we focus on the lost son, the young son who runs off and parties and does his thing. What we don't focus on is the elder son. And as a Christian, a lot of us are like the elder son. We go to church, we check all the boxes. We think we're better than the lost son. And as you read this book, you realize, well, we're both lost. There's just different ways that we're lost. So it's a...
You have an altar call right now.
Yeah, it hits you in the chest, that
book. Come on. What are you reading?
Reading The Energy Bus by John Gordon, a leadership book. We're actually reading that with our players right now. We've got a group, call it 10 Strong, and that's part of our deal that we're doing. And then John Maxwell book, 21 Most Important Minutes of a Leader's Day.
Your 10 Strong is like your leadership core on the team that you invest in? Yeah. Right. So this is a foodie town. What's your favorite restaurant in Louisville?
Well, there's a lot, but I'm a Waffle House guy.
I did not know you were going to say that. What about you,
Seth? We've only been here a year, so there's many that are really good. But we did take a recruit to Jeff Ruby's. That was pretty good.
Okay. How do you unwind?
Oh, man, for me, it's I'm pretty boring. But I just like to get on the couch and watch sports. My wife says, how can you go back home and watch football? I'm like, I don't know. I just love it, you know. Yeah. But football, basketball, baseball, whatever's on in that particular year, I just love to get on the couch, just hang out with our family.
I could definitely get lost in sports. My wife and I, Julie, we'll watch Seinfeld. We record all those if we need to laugh. And for me, if you know, I like to shop at the grocery store. So
to unwind?
Yeah, serious. I put my earbuds in, and my poor wife, if she's afraid to ask me to pick up milk because I'm coming home with way more than just milk. I put those headphones in and walk up and down the aisle, and I get that from my mom.
Who's your favorite pro athlete, sports guy?
For me, it's Michael Jordan, North Carolina.
There you go.
Yeah, but he's a great player, obviously a great athlete.
I was a Don Mattingly fan as a kid with the Yankees and Eli Manning, since we were at Ole Miss when Eli played there, and then he got drafted by my Giants, so been a big Eli Manning fan.
All right, so how about this one? We know the coaches that we get to see on TV. What's one thing that would surprise us about you? And maybe you should channel your wife on this one. If I were to ask your wife, what's one thing that would surprise us about you?
Everybody's shocked at how calm I look on TV when the camera catches me a lot. I'm just super competitive and like to a fault. Like really, as a kid, it was like a little bit of a John McEnroe syndrome. I've matured in them, but I've always thought my poor wife or my kids, because I'm just in nature, I'm just super competitive. And that's good and bad.
Yeah. I think probably, I thought about this question about what would surprise me. I don't know if there's anything. I'm pretty boring, really, you know, to be a f- football coach. But one thing I love doing and I've always have is I grew up, my dad was a paving contractor growing up, so I was in construction my whole life growing up. But I like building houses. I've probably built 11 or 12 houses over the last 20 years, yeah, so cool, I enjoy man. That.
And I'm the guy that can't change the light bulb, so me that too. Makes me feel...
Me too. Yeah. So I'll call you, Scott. All right. Let me ask you this. When it comes to your relationship with God, what do you do regularly to connect with Him?
Going back to the miracle morning, and I've always thought, you know, I've read you could win the mornings. It's what time you set the alarm clock. Spend time in prayer. Do the FCA coaches devotion. I text it to one of my best friends who's also a college football coach to kind of hold each other accountable. And as I wake up earlier and earlier, I kind of realize I think it's God nudging me sometimes to get up and get started and win the morning, because once it seems like you get to the office or you get into the day, the brain is just racing. So I find I spend my best time with God in the morning.
Anyone else identify with that? Like, if I don't get it done in the morning, sometimes I don't get it done, right? What you mean?
I think for me, it's, you know, and I've heard, you read, you grow up, you know, first time in the morning is when you should do it, because that'll be with you throughout the whole day. But sometimes that doesn't happen, you know, if you're being honest. I love it when it does happen. I have a book on my desk in my office, Psalms and Proverbs, and so it's a great time just to get in there. Even if it's 5, 10, 15 That's minutes good. And you just... It's amazing to me how you can just read a couple of verses and it's going to be relatable that day. That something's going to happen to you that day that you can revert back to that if it doesn't happen. But for me, all throughout the day, you know, you're always praying. You're always talking to God. You know, and no matter what's going on. And I think that's, you know, obviously a guide and light for me and how we do our program but also how we live life.
Yeah. So speaking of God, this is maybe the most important question that I'll ask all day. When Kentucky plays U of L, who's God cheering for?
It's got to be Louisville, right? I mean,
there might be a few people.
In my chair is Louisville for sure, 100%.
The God you know, all right.
The one I know.
Dan's not touching that one. Okay, so this series is all about practical ways we take faith to work. So I'm going to ask you guys some practical questions about how you guys take faith to work. And maybe people can take some inspiration or tidbits from these. So let's get super practical. First, I just want to keep it general. How do you unleash Jesus' love at work? Like, what in the world does God have to do with baseball and football, man? How you take him there?
I think for me, I'm sure Scott would say, it's how we treat others. It starts with our coaches because we interact with them on a daily basis. So I think they have to know that I love them and I'm there to serve them, I'm there to help them. Trickles down to the players. I think the players have to know that you love them and you care for them. More so, we have prayer at practice every day. Towards the end of practice, we'll kind of go over our game notes, things for tomorrow, things from yesterday. Everybody take their hat off. It's kind of a silent prayer. But it's really cool that kids will open up and say, hey, I have a prayer request. My grandmother's sick. And just knowing that I'm there, I believe in prayer. And then as I'm missing this morning, I'm missing chapel. We have chapel every Sunday. The whole team goes. I remember calling Lonnie Ali because Assad, you know, grew up a Muslim with Muslim parents. And I said, hey, we have chapel every Sunday. Is it okay if Assad comes? And she was great. She said, well, does Assad want to come? I said, yeah. I talked to Assad. He says he wants to come. And so I've got Muslim, Jewish, Catholic, Methodist, Baptist, non-denominational. I have guys that are not on a Christian walk, but we pray every day, and we have chapel every Sunday.
I mean, those are things that bring people together. Jesus, prayer. You know, yeah, you can clap for that. Even my friends who come from different religious perspectives, they like Jesus, you know? How you take it to football?
Yeah, I think the same way. I obviously, it's how you carry yourself on a daily basis and how we treat our staff. I mean, and it starts with love. I think, you know, for me, coming into this program last year, you know, was eye-opening for me. I think, you know, where I came from at Appalachian State, you know, the way we ran our program there, I played for and coached for a guy by the name of Jerry Moore, a huge influence in my life. And a great impact with so many of the players and the coaching staff. But the way he handled us coaches and us players, I've tried to carry that on here. But it starts with love, treating people with respect. Believing in people, I think, is tremendous. You know, we all, you know, I was a walk-on player when I went to college. Did not get recruited, wasn't a scholarship player. Ended up going to App, and coach believed in me. You know, and that's all I needed, somebody to believe in me. So I try to do that with our players. I try to do that with our coaches. There's several things that we do. You know, we, like right now, we're doing, we got a weekly devotional we're doing with our coaching staff, really anybody in the building. You know, I think last week there's probably close to 40 guys that were in this deal. Chris Morgan's leading that for us. And, you know, so that's one thing we do with our staff throughout the season. You know, you may ask me a little bit later about the fire. But there's another thing that we do with our staff during the season. You know, but I think more than anything that we're, I want to meet people where they are in their faith. There's so many different levels of faith within our guys. There's guys that really hadn't ever heard much about Jesus. There's ones that have been to church their whole life. And so, you know, I just want to meet them where they are, love on them, and help continue to foster their relationship and then introduce them to them if they don't know them.
That's awesome, man. So let's talk about the fire real quick while you're on it. I remember first game of the season, Notre Dame. It was your first game as the coach, U of L, and I get this call from Chris Morgan. He's like, hey, Sat's been coming to Northeast. He loves it. Would love for you to come talk to the guys at the fire. And I was like, the fire? What's the fire? And he's like, well, and he kind of explained it all to me. I want to let you explain that to our congregation because I thought this was one of the coolest things. And I can promise you this, there is not another Power 5 football school in the United States of America who's doing something like this. So I was super inspired by it. Tell them about the fire.
Yeah, well, yes, again, it started back at App State. It's something that when Coach Moore first got there in 89, wanted to be able to have a mentor when he gets there. So he gets there, a guy by the name of Dr. Furman kind of mentored him, and he started this thing we call the fire. But it's Wednesday nights throughout the season. And Tyler's right, nobody in the country really is doing this. You know, during the season, it's so busy. You know, you're focused on your opponent. You're focused on recruiting, all these different things. But after practice on Wednesday, you know, we go to my house, and we build a fire in the back. And by the way, it's pretty hot here. Like in the mountains of North Carolina, wasn't that hot, so the fire was pretty good.
That was a hot night.
But, you know, we're building a fire now here in September. Like, man, we don't get too close to it, you know. Yeah. But I guess it's more symbolic fire. We like, it's a little bitty fire about this big.
Yeah.
But in Boone, North Carolina, we got a big fire. But anyway, we have this fire, and we kind of get around, and we bring in someone to speak. And, you know, Tyler was able to come down and speak to us and really just share. It's basically, we're trying to share life lessons, life principles, and then we pray. We pray for our coaches. We pray for our team. And this is during, you know, a busy time each and every week. And I just think it, for me, it brings us back to the purpose of why we're here and why we're doing what we're doing. And which is unheard of in the midst of such competitive, you know, Power 5 football, ACC, you know, getting ready to play at Notre Dame, and then always, you know, and then we're in the middle of the week, and we're talking about Jesus. And I think that's an awesome thing. I think it just put perspective for why we're doing what we're doing.
Perspective, that's so good. Yeah, it does. Yeah, praise God. I was super impressed by the culture of your coaches. I mean, it was about leadership. It was about prayer. It was cool that people were sharing prayer requests to each other. And then Wendy's. They ate Wendy's. I said, "Why? So you guys got to have like a food budget for Wendy's. Why you eat Wendy's?" And I asked one of his assistants, like, "Why Wendy's?" And he got real serious and looked at me. He's like, "We've been doing this for 25 years. So Wendy's is like, however long it is, like, Wendy's is the thing." So, Dan, I want to ask you, man, you've got something kind of similar to that. Every 4 years, you take the guys to the Dominican Republic. In fact, we got some pictures. If you want to roll through some of those DR pictures right now, it's a baseball trip. But it's also an outreach trip, if you will. So talk a little bit about you and the guys in the DR.
The NCAA lets you take an international trip, every 4 years. Okay. So we went, I guess it was about 5 years ago. I had been on a mission trip myself. And if you've heard me say that many, many years, I sat there in those seats and never felt like I was mission worthy. I think that's the devil attacking us. It's easy for us to sit there and I got too much junk in my closet. I'm a sinner. You know, I've always looked at that mission guy, you know, with the beard and the granola look. And I'm like, man, I'm just not where they're at. Like, they're at such a higher level than me. But I was helping raise money for SCORE International, Coach Keith Madison, 25-year head coach at Kentucky. And we're great friends. And I was raising money. And I just felt this calling. Hey, you've been raising money for 3 or 4 years. You need to go down there and see what this is about. So I went with about 200 coaches, and I thought, wow, I am mission worthy. We're all mission worthy. And I need to bring my team back. And so brought our team 5 years ago. Unbelievable experience just to serve, to love. And so we just went back again this fall. Tyler went with us 5 years ago. We sent Colin Lyman from Northeast, who played for me this year. And it's just to get to a third world country, to see the smiles on their faces, to teach them they can serve, that they're mission worthy. And when we got back, I stood on the bus and I said, guys, the flame is lit. The key now is we have to keep the flame lit. It's easy for that flame to burn out. Like you could do something great for a weekend or a week and then just go back to your, you know, normal life, if you call it that. But felt like when you're inspired from a trip like that, let's keep the flame lit. And so we did. And at the end of the fall, we had more community service hours than any team in the country because that trip and then it inspired us right back here in Louisville to serve. As you say, love the Ville. We're definitely trying to love the Ville.
No doubt. You know what blew my mind is when I went 5 years ago, I remember you guys had everybody out there. You did a clinic. About 300 kids show up from like the local villages coming out of like bushes, trees. Like, where are these kids coming from? And there's probably about 15 or 20 of them lined up at shortstop taking ground balls, and they had one glove. One glove. Kid would field it, and they would hand it to the next kid. Like, kid would field it, hand the next kid. And I was watching some of your players who got three or four gloves in their bags, and they're just like, man, you know, it puts things in perspective, and it does light a fire when you come back. Okay, so this one I'll give to you, Dan. What's your number one spiritual struggle at work that you find yourself constantly battling?
Well, I talked about how competitive I am. So, you know, that desire to win, that desire to be the best, when things don't go your way, for us traditional, you know, grew up Catholic, it's Lent season. So, you know, I still try to follow, giving up something during Lent. And one that I've always struggled at was language. I've tried to give up like cussing during the Lent season.
I see some elbowing going on here?
And when it's during the baseball season, it is like, and it makes you feel guilty because you know what flows, what comes out of the mouth comes from the heart. And so there's times you'll say things and you'll go, I mean, how did you just say that? And one thing I'm not afraid to do as a Christian is apologize. So I'll often rub elbows with a kid or I'll put my arm around a kid and I'll go, hey, I got to apologize. You know, what I said yesterday, man, I didn't. Man, that's, you know, and I'll say, I'm a sinner. And most of the time, a kid will look at me and he'll go, Coach, I'm a sinner too. Mm. You know, and you go, okay, I just want to make sure we're on the same page there. and that's probably where I struggle. I struggle the most in the workplace.
I love that asking forgiveness, though. So, Scott, let me bounce this one off you. We have a congregation full of high-capacity leaders who trend toward overload and burnout. I'm as guilty of this as anyone. How do you keep yourself from burning out, or how do you keep yourself full, man?
Yeah, I think number just one word, balance, I think is the word. You know, and in this profession, what I'm doing, what Coach is doing, it's and a lot of businesses. I mean, you feel like you particularly as a young person, you want to strive to be the best, and you know you're putting in hour and after hour and after hour, and you want to continue to strive to do that. And really, what we've all learned is that it's just hard work. You got to put the work in, the time in, and sure. When you do that, though, you're going to sacrifice something. So I think I was again fortunate to play for Coach Moore, where he had learned some lessons along his way, where he was sleeping at the office, which is not uncommon. For football coaches, you know, there's several coaches throughout the country during the season. You'll sleep in the office 2 to 3 nights a week. You don't even go home, and so he was doing that at a young age. And then he went and worked for a guy that said you don't have to do that and you can still win. And so when he came to App, you know, back in '89, the way he ran his program, every coach after practice went home. You know, we didn't stay up after there and watch film after that to be there at midnight. I've carried that along since I've been a head coach, is to when you get finished with practice, man, go home. If you're a little girl has a recital, go see it. If your boy's got a little basketball game at a rec league, go do that. That's not usual in this profession, A lot of head coaches, you know, we got a job to do here. You got to be here. You can't leave. You know, you can't go see your family. So balance is the key, I think, for me. And that's in all aspects. I think in the offseason, I want our coaches to get away. I want them to go have fun, whatever that may be, whatever, you know, playing golf or, you know, whatever. Go to, you know, vacation. But even during the office time, even during the season when it's go time, I want them to take their kids to school in the morning. And then when we come in, we'll watch film. You know, there's enough time today to get what we have to get done. We can do it and not sacrifice our time with our family. So I think it's extremely important. I also think you can be a lot more successful. Because I think when you step outside of your bubble where you're at, you refresh your mind. And when you come back in, man, you're so much more creative. You got so much more passion and energy to go to put it in.
It's true. So, man, I can't say that enough. Most of the people in this room get the opportunity to set the culture somewhere, right? For a lot of us in our home, you set the culture and the pace of your home. For some of you, it's with your team at the workspace. Some of you run your own business or you run the office space. You got a lot of employees and you get to set that culture. Man, is it ever freeing to have a leader who sets a culture that says balance over busyness, man. I would challenge everybody in the room. That's a great way to witness to your people. Okay, I got two videos I want to show. I want to show Scott's first. It's the second one for up there with the slides. Okay, and to put this in perspective before we show the video, you have revolutionized the culture of the U of L football team in a year. It's insane to me. And like when I got to meet your coaches and come to the fire, I was like, there's something special here. But it was this moment when I knew, like, I might quit my job and go work for Scott if he were to offer me a job. It's this moment. So can you show the video? This is the culture here.
I mean, you talk about guys who are fired up. Wayne Ledford, he is something else, the offensive coordinator.
Well, he's something else. Look at the defensive line coach. He's already, Mark Ivey's bloodied.
Yes, he was bleeding.
Look at this.
Bloody nose.
I mean, I think both, you know, I think it has shown itself up. You see these coaches all fired up, getting their guys going. I don't know that it's necessary.
Goodness gracious. So you got Dwayne Ledford, you got Phil Ivey, you got, I mean, like, these guys are awesome. I asked him if Ivey could come do that before I preach on Sundays for me. Just grab me by the face.
Tell me, mine, I want that.
That's true. That's true.
I want that life right there.
So, I mean, but I think that's so indicative of this culture of the guys loving the players, competing with the players, setting the example. Like, just talk a little bit about the culture revolution at U of L.
Yeah, well, you know, these guys right here are passionate. They're passionate about anything that they do, and I think that's contagious. I mean, you think about it. Anything that you've ever been a part of, if someone has passion, then you're going to get everything out of that person and everybody around you. And so these guys are that way. When I first got here, you know, I wanted to bring those type guys along with me. And the one thing, the way my leadership style is, I'm not a micromanager. I hire these guys and I let them go to work. You know, that's who they are. I think you can get the most out of somebody when you allow them to be who they are and be creative and not scared to make a mistake. And they coach fearlessly. And that's the way we run our program. All the while, we respect our players. Our kids love that. Like, our players love that. And the way they're getting mixing it up. And I told Coach Ivey, I mean, Ivy's getting a little bit up there. He's upper 40s. I'm like, yeah, how much longer can you do that, man? Like, you can't be doing that much longer. You know, but yeah, he said, yes, I can. You know, he's like, but those guys are so passionate. But really, it starts with trust, I think, you know, and being consistent. The first thing that we did in our building is we wanted those guys to trust us, and we want to be able to trust them. And so when we do that on a consistent basis, and it takes a little bit of time for that to happen, but you have to be consistent every single day. And I think we've been able to do that. You know, we just started spring practice this past week, last Monday. What a difference a year makes. It's so much joy for us as coaches to go out there and be around our guys. And I think, you know, and they're loving it. I mean, they love the way we coach. We're getting it from both ends, the coaches to the players and players to the coaches. And, you know, but it's being consistent, and it's about just loving them, loving on the guys every single day.
Yeah. I want to show a video of you, Dan. You've had some big wins. You've also had some tough losses over the years there. I've seen some of them firsthand. 5 years ago, probably was one of the toughest, Cal State Fullerton, game 3 of a super regional. Winner goes to Omaha, 11 innings. There was the controversial fair foul call. Some of you guys might remember watching that game. Ball was clearly foul. And after the game, with emotions still fresh from the loss, you were feeling the pain of the great season coming to an end. Got microphones put in your face, asked to respond, and I remember being so inspired by this. Can you show that clip of Dan, that press conference?
Hi, guys. Thanks.
Last thing, you know, because these are the times You're glad you're a Christian. These are the times you're glad you have a spiritual faith. You hear me? Quote the Bible. When we win, I'm not perfect. I'm a sinner, but I love God, and I know He loves me, and He's blessed this program, and we'll be back.
Talk to me about that moment. What made you say that?
You pray, especially in the postseason. You know, your prayers are strong throughout the year, but it seems like when you get in the postseason, man, those prayers are diligent and faithful, and you're praying that you make the right decisions and say the right things, do the right things, and you just trust God in those moments. And, you know, amazing, 12 months later, we lose on a grand slam in the Super Regionals. So it's not like it gets easier, but it kind of goes back to the Prodigal God book, where, you know, I've been critical. I'm not a big award show fan. My wife, Julie, bless her heart, all those music awards and Oscars, and it seems like every Sunday night one of those shows is on, and I've always been so critical of the actor or the musician who gets on stage and gives his political view. Why do I gotta say that? Do I really care? I don't wanna hear that. And maybe it's because I don't agree with what they're saying. And then I realize, wait a second, man, you do that in your press conferences, you know? So I often wonder how many people see those press conferences and go, man, why has he gotta do that? Why has he gotta talk about God in a press conference? And I just feel like that's God, you know, calling me to say, hey, man, I put this microphone in front of you, and through the good and the bad times, now's the time to show your faith. And so I felt like I've been a little more prepared the last few years. When we beat Kentucky in the Super Regionals, I had a poem already written out that was from a book, Through the Eyes of a Lion. And I gave it to Drew Ellis to read it because I didn't think I'd be able to read it, because I'll get emotional. And then last year we won the Super Regionals. I had a text from my buddy Rock, the college football coach, and he talked about using these moments through the good and the bad to glorify God and share your faith. And so I did, and I saw a coach speak on a video a couple months ago, and he had this kind of poem on the screen, and I screenshotted it, and I already have it on a piece of paper, and I'm saying to myself, man, we're gonna win the national championship, and at the end of the press conference, this is what I'm reading. And it just talked about being a Christian. It talks about our highs and lows and our challenges daily, and I thought, man, this is what God wants me to say. But the reality is I probably have to read it even if we don't win a national championship. But in my mind, I'm thinking I'll read it after we win the national championship.
Yeah. So we are simply out of time. I wish we'd go all morning, but any final words you would say to your church, just of encouragement? No.
I'll go. Tyler let us look at the questions, and not that I really studied them or anything, but one question that stuck out was, I think, what was your greatest achievement?
Yeah.
Your greatest moment.
What's your greatest achievement?
And I swear I'm not saying this to score points, but I immediately thought of my wife, Julie. And I didn't answer it when he asked about my spiritual growth because I was going to say it during that. I met Julie in college, and she was like the first person I'd ever met who like did devotions, who wrote notes down, had a journal. And I'm not here to dog being a Catholic, and my brother will disown me if I do. I got great memories growing up being a Catholic, but I just didn't have a relationship with Jesus. Maybe there's some things I didn't grasp. And Julia was the first person that you read the word, you write the word down, you study the word, you have a relationship with Jesus. And we've been on this spiritual journey for 25 years now. And as we've gone through the ups and downs, praying together, praying out loud, learning and growing through this time, I would just challenge you, if you're married in this room, man, if get with your spouse, and if you guys can grow together, what that will do for your relationship with God, what that will do for your relationship with your kids. And believe me, we haven't figured this out. We're not counselors, we're not experts, but we've got one in college and one in high school, and boy, we've been on the roller coaster of life, and I look forward to the next 25 years with Julie, because I just know God put her in my life, and there's no way I'm sitting on the stage today, I'm a college coach, I am who I am, without that bond that we formed in college. And and I always say she was like a Lady Bird in Louisville, she was a cougarette at the College of Charleston. So she looked great in black spandex. And I fell for her immediately when I saw her dance at a basketball game. And that was my greatest accomplishment. And that leads to my spiritual strength and my spiritual growth.
Yeah. True that, man. In closing word, Scott.
Man, I got to talk about my wife now, don't I?
I mean, save it for the 11 o'clock service when she's here.
Oh, man.
She's 11.
That's so awesome. I mean, it's pretty cool. It's very similar. At App State, my wife ran track at App State, was an athlete, and I was redshirted my freshman year. So I'm out there on the football field, supposed to be practicing, you know, but your eyes wander a little bit, you know, and I'm seeing these girls run around the track. Well, she's one of these girls running around the track. So the next thing you know, we're going out. But we dated for about 4 years at App, and got engaged my senior year, right before my final season there. And my wife, well, at the time, my girlfriend and then fiance, man, my biggest prayer warrior for me and our family, unbelievable, and still is. I mean, she prays her tail off on the sideline of these football games, and then all throughout the week for our players and our staff, unbelievable. But what I was going to say is about prayer and being faithful in prayer. You know, the reason I'm here is because of that. I mean, my prayer for many years today, we were very successful, but my prayer was that God, you know, if you want me somewhere else, open doors, you know, and lay that foundation wherever that may be. And there really wasn't a lot of doors open, but it opened up here at Louisville. And the first guy I met was Chris Morgan. And you know what? He had been praying for the same thing. It's unbelievable, you know, how God works. And it's in his time. It's not our time. My baseball coach at App State actually coached this guy right here. Before I even left Boone, he said, I got a church for you when you get up there. How about that? I mean, just the way God works, it's incredible. And so I would just say be faithful in prayer. It's God's time. And put all your faith in him. And it's going to work out for the good.
Can you thank these guys? Thank you. Appreciate you. Good luck today. Good W. Thanks, Scott. Yep. I appreciate you, man. Thank you. Yeah. Good stuff.